Tim Hunt's views do not represent the views of the Hello PhD staff, their families, or anyone they've ever spoken to. Hello, and welcome to the Hello PhD podcast, your insider's guide to life and lab. We're your hosts, Daniel Arneman
and Joshua Hall.
Today on the podcast, we decide whether to defend or deride Tim Hunt's controversial comments on women in lab, and we answer your questions. Stay with us. Every week on the show, we sample and review some tasty ethanol, and this week we are going way back to honor the beer that was a staple in our grad school days. What do we have this week, Josh?
This week we have Yingling Lager.
And do you want to do the honors of opening that bad boy?
Yeah, please, you do it. You got it.
Let's see if I can do it without spraying Yingling Lager everywhere.
Don't get that on the mic, please. Oh.
So I bought the smallest volume that I could find.
Who's thirsty?
At the store. It has 24 fluid ounces, one pint.
One pint, 24 ounces. Did you Google that or you knew that?
No, it's written on the side. So tell them why we're drinking this.
So we have sampled the Yingling Lager for our inaugural Hello PhD podcast because this was our beer of choice as first year graduate students.
And probably second year and third year.
And beyond.
Yeah. Okay, toast?
Toast. Cheers. So Yingling, that comes from the great state of...
That's a Pennsylvania beer. The oldest operating brewing company in the United States, established 1829.
There you have it. And that is the official beer of episode one.
I have two facts to read about it because I think they're fascinating. So to be the oldest brewing company in North America, you have to have survived Prohibition. And they did this by producing near beers, quote unquote, which were 0.5% alcohol. Mm. And they made ice cream and ran dance halls. So I thought that was a useful piece of information.
Now, they made ice cream with the beer.
I don't know if that's true.
Or they made beer and made ice cream.
They also ran a dairy and made ice cream. But
maybe that's how Ben and Jerry's got started.
I think it was a different substance. Anyways, let's move on to the next section of the show now that we've got our Yingling Lager here.
Great. So what are we going to talk about today?
Tim Hunt. Yeah, and let me go ahead and read the quote. Let me do the disclaimer, though. Tim Hunt's views do not represent the views of the Hello PhD staff, their families, or anyone they've ever spoken to. But here is the quote from Tim Hunt. And do you want to say who he is, and then I'll read the quote?
So Tim Hunt is a Nobel laureate in the field of biochemistry?
You got me.
Okay, we'll edit that out if I'm wrong. And so he was speaking. And what did he say, Dan?
So I'll do my Tim Hunt impression. Let me tell you about my trouble with girls. Three things happen when they are in the lab. You fall in love with them, they fall in love with you, and when you criticize them, they cry.
Tim Hunt, everybody.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's the show. So
I don't think we can leave it there. So Twitter blew up.
Yes.
And it ended up in him actually losing his job.
Yeah, so this guy, well-respected scientist, he and his wife both, if I understand. Obviously, there was outcry over this. Twitter blew up as it does, and he was forced to resign. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think we can agree it's a stupid thing to say. It is probably something that if you think it, you should think through why you think it. But that part's obvious. To me, it's interesting to think of scientists losing their job over like a Twitter fire. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there's several issues here, and it's hard for me to, you know, to separate some of these out. So on one hand, there's the issue of continued sexism in the science culture, and there's been a lot of back and forth in the media lately over the extent to which that exists. I mean, there's a lot of high-profile stuff that's been out there about income inequality, and that certainly happens between men and women in science.
And we can probably devote 5, 10 shows, 15 shows to just those topics.
Yeah, we should talk about that. So there's that whole issue, which is in the front. But yeah, then there's also the issue of social media in general and the role it plays in the world we live in now. And this is a great example. Someone with a very established career, a Nobel laureate, losing their job over a line.
What he says is a joke. I mean, he
claims
that
it was a joke.
It's ironic.
Of course.
It was a joke.
And Tim Hunt has said he goes grocery shopping. So that that abdicates him from everything he said, because he, in fact, does get groceries sometimes.
There are cases that in life you should stop talking. There are times when your explanation really just makes it worse. I think that was probably one of those statements.
Yeah, and you know, I was at a conference recently, and there was a panel, and one of the topics that came up was just this. This was actually before the Tim Hunt thing. This was about a month and a half ago. But the topic was about women in science. And this topic was being discussed among the panelists. And then a very astute graduate student stood up and pointed out that the individuals discussing the topic of women in science were a panel of men. And yeah. The irony of that. So I think really, you know, maybe this is something for future show. We should have some of our female science colleagues come on and discuss their views on this.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I also want to, you know, it is a bit of a train wreck, and it's interesting to observe and to watch this man's career explode. But what do you think, just do we have a responsibility as scientists to make the workplace fair? Do you think there's something that individuals can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think scientists, more than anyone, I mean, we, you know, we devote our lives to truth and to trying to avoid bias, right? That's the whole reason we have statistics, right? Is to avoid our own gut feelings, avoid our own biases, whether they are explicit or implicit. And so certainly I think in this case, whether we're talking about gender, race, ethnicity, whatever we're talking about, science, we should be on the front line of,
so apply, of getting beyond that. Apply your scientific thinking to your own prejudice, basically.
Absolutely,
to
absolutely.
Take a look, unpack
and,
that.
And studies are out there that show education level in no way prevents you from some of these implicit biases. Maybe that's a topic for a future show as well.
That's great. Well, we'll leave that there for now, and we'll continue to pay attention to how that story unfolds. We've got a couple questions that came in.
Sure. And I want to say, too, if anybody out there listening has some comments on this topic, especially some of our female science listeners, feel free to email us podcast@hellophd.com, or you can tweet at us at @hellophd.
That's right. You got the Twitter handle. Be very careful with that.
Very careful. And along those lines, you can send questions to us. And we would love to talk about any question that has to do with anything related to the science culture, the lab life, whatever you want to talk about.
Careers beyond lab.
Careers beyond the lab. As Dan has a lot of experience with that, as do I at this point. So let's hear some of these questions we have that have come in.
Okay, the first one kind of comes from the beginning.
From the beginning.
This is from Paul. He's an incoming first year grad student, and he's trying to choose labs for his first year rotations. And he writes, "I need to choose 3 rotations over the next year. And I can't decide whether I should go with a PI who is kind of new and just getting started, or one who is more established. I like the idea of more personal attention from a new faculty member, but I know that the bigger labs tend to publish more and look better on a resume. What should I do?" That's a fantastic question.
That's a great question.
What should he do, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I hear a lot of students talk about, and I think there are pros and cons both ways. So, you know, some advantages of working with that brand new faculty member who's just been hired. You know, the energy is there. They're going to be right next to you, shoulder to shoulder, doing experiments with you because, you know, they're trying to get their career off the ground. And that can be really exciting to work that closely with your research mentor. Now, there are some downsides to that. For those of us who have quite a bit of experience with mentors, you know, the farther along in your career, the less you want your PI standing right next to you while you do experiments.
It's a fair point, yeah. Helpful when you're young and new and trying to learn new techniques becomes extremely annoying later on.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in graduate school when my PI would venture out of his office and pick up a pipette, man, we all got a little bit scared. And so,
But as an undergrad, I worked in a lab where he had just finished his postdoc, and he was in the lab more than we were, and we learned a lot because he was there. But you had the PI sitting next to you in the lab, and it's got its.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is one of those questions that the answer is it depends on several factors. I think on one hand, so Paul, who wrote in, was a first-year graduate student. I think the considerations are a little different if you're a graduate student versus a postdoc. So, you know, as a graduate student, in my opinion, your main goal as a grad student is to learn to become the best scientist as possible. And that time, you know, what you study is important. Certainly, you should be interested in it, but you really want to be in an environment where you're going to get the training and support that you need to learn to do science. And so in that situation, you know, working side by side with that PI could be a really great experience. Now, as a postdoc, you probably have a little more awareness of the way you like to do science, a little more experience under your belt. And, you know, there are always those issues that you hear about. If you're a postdoc that wants to go on in academia and start your own lab, you don't want to be viewed by your mentor as his or her number one competitor when you leave the lab. And so someone more established is less likely to view you as a threat versus a brand new person.
Yeah. Now, is it safe to say that for Paul, because he gets three choices, he can try it?
Yeah. And that's a great point. So most PhD programs out there, at least in the biological biomedical sciences, have rotations. And Paul sounded like he was choosing rotation labs. And that's really the beauty of science graduate school, is you get to go out there and try these labs out for 8 weeks, 10 weeks, and, you know, just go and see. Because the other thing we always have to be careful of, every new PI is not the same. Every established PI is not the same. These are all individuals. And so really, Paul, you have to think about what your style is, what's best for you, and just go give it a shot and you know, see how it works for you.
Yeah, and I'll throw in, pay attention to the other people in the lab. And pay a lot of attention to the other graduate students that have come before you and that are currently there. A rotation is not a graduate lab. So it will change. Your relationship with the PI will change. Your relationship with the other people will change. I think it's important as you're there to gather as much information as you can.
Absolutely.
So that you are ready to make that decision at the end of the third rotation and you've got the right choice to make. If you don't see any other graduate students graduating and the PI doesn't want to let them go because they're necessary for keeping the lab running, maybe a bit of a red flag. Or if people kind of rotate through the lab, but they don't stay, or things like that are worth paying attention to.
Yeah, the more 8-year graduate students walking around, yeah. The more red flags that are flying.
Danger, yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So, great.
I'm sure there's more to unpack there and lots more to talk about. But I've got another question for us from Shannon. She's a postdoc currently job searching. And Shannon writes, I'm looking at my job prospects at the university level, and I can't decide. Should I go for tenure or non-tenure? What are the pros and cons, and would I really be happy just teaching?
That's an interesting one.
Knowing very little about Shannon, would Shannon be happy just teaching?
We are going to read into Shannon's situation entirely and make tons of assumptions that are probably not true, but that's what we have to do.
That's what scientists do.
That's what we do.
We make
all
a lot
time.
Of assumptions that aren't true. Yeah.
So my hypothesis about Shannon is so I've interested in the way she phrased just teaching.
It says something, doesn't it?
It does. And I think what that says to me, actually, is that highlights a big, misconception, or at least a way that I'm going to go ahead and use this term that I don't like, alternate careers in science are viewed. I'm sure a lot of you all listening have definitely heard that terminology, as an alternate career is anything other than a tenure track faculty position.
Yeah, I just looked down my nose at those people.
and you know, really, if you look at the data that's out there, and the numbers vary a little bit depending on the study you read, but really the percentage of individuals going on to tenure track faculty positions is fairly low. I've seen numbers as low as 7% up to 18%. So I always like to say that these days, you could say that the tenure track faculty position is the alternate career, because the majority of science trainees these days aren't going that direction. And so, you know, what I would say to Shannon is, again, it depends. And I think it depends on you. It depends on what you like to do. I mean, it depends why you are looking at tenure track versus non-tenure track. Is it an availability of positions? But, you know, Shannon, if you enjoy teaching, if teaching is the thing you want to do, then that's what you should pursue. Because I think at the end of the day, it's your life and your career, and you should try to find that career that enables you to do more of the things you like and fewer of the things that seem to suck you dry.
Yeah, it's probably worth noting that Shannon didn't say, I absolutely hate teaching, you know, what do I do? She said, would I really enjoy just teaching? Which means she must get something out of it.
Absolutely.
She must enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And then is it a question of, does she personally kind of diminish the value in her own mind of teaching? Or does she feel like only real scientists continue doing research at the bench? Or, you know, it seems like a lot going on behind the scenes.
Absolutely. And Dan, you and I both eventually stepped off of that research track to pursue careers in science in some way, but not necessarily a traditional research career.
With scientific, yeah, that was the joke about I looked down my nose at those people. I got out of the lab as soon as I possibly could.
What that comment made me think about was there can be a lot of trepidation in stepping off of the research track, especially, you know, Shannon said she was a postdoc, and so, you know, I can remember being a postdoc, and at that point in your career, the average postdoc has spent, I mean, how many years have you been doing research in the lab, training?
So hopefully you started as an undergrad, right?
Right.
And you did the summertime. And
undergrad research, graduate school, the average 5.5 years or so. Postdoc, let's say you've done 2, 3, 4 years or
more. 5, 6, 7.
I mean, so it's safe to say you may have spent a decade or more of your life in the research lab training to be a research scientist and going to lab day in, day out. So,
and you know what you haven't seen? People doing anything else.
That's true. Your whole world.
Yeah, you've modeled your life on the PI. You've tried to understand how to get grants and how to manage a lab and how to order reagents.
Absolutely. And so there can be a lot of fear, even if, you know, even if as a student or a postdoc, you start to think about other things you might like to do, to jump from that research tree to some different tree that may seem cool, but you really have no experience with it. And so it's not a trivial decision to make.
It's the unknown. And it's stepping into the unknown. That's scary regardless.
Absolutely. And I remember personally having that fear of, what if I make a mistake? I mean, I don't feel like this necessarily is for me, but at least it's a familiar, it's a known quantity. And so what's that thing over there? It looks great, but what if I'm wrong? And it can often be hard to find the people around, because like you said, in the research environment, sometimes you're in this bubble where you're around other people who've done research. So it's even hard to find the people maybe who are doing the things that you want to do. So maybe something that you could do, Shannon, also, and maybe you have done this, but seek out individuals who are doing that career, that teaching-only career, and see what their life is like. Talk to them and see if their lifestyle and their day-to-day is the type of thing that sounds cool to you.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And in the rest of the world, they call that an informational interview.
Informational interview,
which
that's
people,
great.
People are very happy to give their wisdom to young upstarts or people entering the field. So it's easy to ask, and people will very often give you the time to do it. Can I ask a follow-up question to Shannon's question?
Here's a follow-up question from Dan Arneman.
Okay. Is tenure still a thing? Do people still go after tenure?
Absolutely. I think the tenure track faculty position is still very much a coveted thing most places.
But do people, I mean, is it a statistical improbability? Do people still get tenure at a rate that's meaningful? And what does it buy you? The Tim Hunt that we opened the show with, his tenure has very little impact. His Nobel Prize has very little impact.
Well, watch what you say.
Fine. So what does it mean to be tenured when it doesn't mean forever I have a job?
Yeah, and maybe that's a misconception. I know there has
If you keep your mouth shut, you keep your job, maybe.
That's good advice in all fields.
I think that's true.
We joke.
But is it still a very desirable thing and something that people can achieve?
I believe so. I mean, there's certainly people out there who strive for those. But again, nowadays that certainly is the minority of people seeking out those positions.
I don't know. I kind of equate it with the you work for a lifetime at GE and get a pension, mm-hmm. and just the world seems to have changed, but maybe not so in science.
Unsure. But you know, again, I don't want to look down upon or put down tenure track faculty jobs that are mostly research, because those are certainly wonderful careers if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, it seems like a sweet gig. I'm not putting it down. It seems exciting.
Yeah, I think the difference in where we're at now is, you know, there's a lot more awareness that there are many different things you can do with the PhD, whereas for a long time the assumption was as a science PhD, the next step was to become a tenure track faculty member. And nowadays, that's the right decision for some, but it's not the right decision for everyone.
I think that makes sense. Well, we'll leave it there and go to the closing section of the show, which is the etymology.
Etymology. Walk us through what is that?
I happen to like words, so it's not entomology. That would be bugs.
That's what I was thinking, and I was about to get my fly swatter out.
Don't do it. So I like words, and I like them because they hide hints about how people understand the world. And I think there are some very, very cool science words. So every week I'll choose a word and I will tell you what it means, where it comes from. And most of the time it will be from science. But this week I found a word that I thought was really appropriate to today's show. And that word is Yingling.
Yingling. So that's a word that means something.
It sure does. Yeah, it is an anglicized version of the founding brewer, the German brewer David Gottlob Jungling's last name. He moved to the United States in 1823 and founded the brewery. But the reason I thought this was so appropriate was because Jungling is a German word for young man. And I thought, that is appropriate that the beer we drank as young men in graduate school.
When I was a young man, I drank as a young man.
Exactly right. So I thought that was pretty good.
Fascinating. That also reminds me I need to take a drink of my Jungling.
Delicious. It's very smooth. You can't complain about it.
Very smooth in these days of IPA, let's hop everything. Yep. The Jungling is definitely a breath of fresh air.
That's right. So we'll leave it there. Please tweet us, HelloPhD on Twitter. We would love to hear from you. Send us your ideas, your questions, and you will hear from us again.
And we'll talk about you on the show and make hypotheses about your life.
Yeah. Tell us as much as you possibly can so that we don't make things up about you.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
We'd like to post an erratum to this episode. One pint is in fact 16 ounces. And for those of you keeping score at home, that's 473.176 milliliters, which is proof that it's time to switch over to the metric system. Sorry about that.